Good morning. Today's daf about Bekamas Mem Gimel. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zeichon Ishmael Slibig Arvel Bashmuel. We begin today in the Gemara on Mem Beis Amud Aleph towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are in a very long run-on sentence of the Gemara. It's not a run-on sentence. There are basically three opinions, but the essential question is as follows: when the Torah describes an animal killing, so there are two psukim in the Torah that formulate exactly what is the consequence of a one's animal goring somebody to death. So one pasuk describes when the animal is a tam, the other pasuk describes when the animal is a muad. When the animal is a tam, so the Torah says, this is Parshas Mishpatim, Perichafal Pasuk Chavches, V'chigach Shor is ish o is isha, if an animal were to gore either a man or a woman, Vameis, and the person dies, Sakol Yisakel Ashor, the ox himself is put to death, V'lo Ye Achel Es Bisaro, and one is not allowed to eat the meat of the animal, Uval Ashor Naki, and the Baal Ashor is Naki, and he is going to be free. So, what exactly is meant with the words Baal Shor Naki? So, that is what we have been discussing. And we're going to continue to discuss in terms of what exactly is meant by that. Rav Yossi Aglili, as quoted in yesterday's Gemara, is of the opinion, if you'd like to see it inside, it's on Mem Beis Amud Aleph. The Rav Yossi Aglili says that when it says that the owner of the animal is Naki, so it means Dmei Vlados. It means that the owner of the animal is not going to have to pay Dmei Vlados. And that means the following. That means if one's animal were to gore a pregnant woman and caused her to miscarriage, so generally speaking, that is a financial obligation. Meaning one owes for what's called the Dmei Vlados, the market value of the those fetuses. And who is awarded the Dmei Vlados? So we're going to be discussing more of that later this morning. But for now, it's safe to say, and suffice to say, the husband of the woman gets the Dmei Vlados. But we'll discuss that later on. But right now, all we need to know is that there is it's a financial liability. It's the man, the owner of the animal, has to pay the Dmei Vlados. What we're learning now is that that's only true if a man hits a woman and causes her to miscarry. But if an animal hits a woman and causes her to miscarry, so then he does not have to pay the Dmei Vlados. He does not, the owner of the animal does not have to pay the Dmei Vlados. That is what Rav Yossi Aglili does with the pasuk of Ubal Hashor Naki. That if the owner of the animal is a tam, and the tam animal did damage to a woman, causing her to miscarry, so then there's not going to be a liability of Dmei Vlados. Okay, well, the problem with that is we already addressed yesterday, and we're now going to continue discussing today, is that we knew that already. When the Torah introduces us to the topic of a woman and the Dmei Vlados, the Torah says, V'chi yinatsu anashim. Right, this is also Parshas Mishpatim, same Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis. The Pasuk says, V'chi yinatsu anashim. V'nakfu isha harav yasu yiladev v'lo yason anoshi anesh. So the Torah describes that when men are fighting and one causes a miscarriage to the woman, then and only then do you have to pay Dmei Vlados. So the truth of the matter is, Rav Yossi Aglili, the question is on him. How can he have an additional drasha? Why does he need an additional drasha of Ubal Hashor Naki when the Torah is pretty clear that the only time that there's going to be any type of increment of payment for Dmei Vlados is only when a man causes a miscarriage, not when the animal causes a miscarriage? This is a question that the Gemara had. We are in the middle of attempting to answer this question. We're going to start in the Gemara today. Ela Abayva Virava Damitar Vaihu. So the it is two-thirds of the way down in Mem Beis Amud Aleph. I think I read this part yesterday, but let's just read it again. So we are now addressing the question of, why do I need the additional drasha according to Rav Yossi Aglili? Ela Abayi V'Rava D'Amar Tavayu Anashim Ein Ason B'Isha Yanshu. So he says, look, when it comes to men, so if there is no ason, meaning if the woman doesn't die, so then they're going to have the financial liability. But if the woman's dead, so then there's not going to be financial liability. We'll explain why in just a moment. But yesha sambi isha lo yanshu. But if the woman dies, so then there's not going to be a financial liability. Velo shvarim. Now, into that, we can make a distinction between people killing versus animals killing. Afagaf yesha son yanshu. So, when it comes to an animal who kills, now we know that when an animal kills a person, it doesn't. Even if there's going to be death, there's also going to be financial liability as well when it comes to animals. So therefore, I might have thought that the animal causing a miscarriage, the owner of the animal should be liable to pay. So the Gemara says, "Hadaksiv Rachmana Balashur Naki Depater." That's why I need the additional drasha to tell me that no, that even though we could have constructed a what seems to be a very good argument why we would have thought that the owner of the animal should have to pay the Dmei Vlados, the Torah comes to tell us with the additional pasuk of Balashur Naki that the owner of the animal does not have to. So the Gemara says, "Maskel Rav Adabava." So Rav Adabava says, "Wait 1 second. Let's go back to the first point that Rabbi and Rava made, which is that if a man kills a woman, so if there's death, no money. If there isn't death, so then there's a financial liability." So the Gemara says, but Rav Adabava says, but that's not true. Atuba ason talya milsa bekavana talya milsa. No. If there is death, that doesn't automatically mean that that there's not going to be financial payment. Meaning, let's say you kill somebody, but unintentionally. So if you kill somebody unintentionally, there's going to be financial liability. Ella Amar Vada Ba'ava. Now, let's sit on this point for just a moment, and then we'll move on. Rav Adabava now is espousing the position that if I unintentionally kill somebody, let me change the pronoun. If someone were to kill somebody unintentionally, so then, and there's a financial liability that comes together with the death, so then there'd be an exemption from the financial, so then there wouldn't be an exemption from the financial liability. Why? Because since it was an unintended murder, there's no chi of misa, and so therefore, because there's no chi of misa, therefore there's a chi of mamon. Rashi notes over here that this position of Adabav is a little bit difficult, because we know the basic rule that the rule of kimle b'derabim minei is that if I have a harsher punishment, I'm going to be exempt from the lighter punishment, and even if we can't execute the harsher punishment and you get off on a technicality, you're still going to be exempt from the lighter punishment. So Rashi over here points out that Rav Adabava says, well, you see, if I kill somebody unintentionally, so I'm getting out of the chi of misa, so therefore there should be a chi of mamon. Rashi says that's not generally how we subscribe. We generally subscribe to the viewpoint that if you are, even if you're not going to actually be put to death, but what you did could result in being put to death, so then you're going to be exempt. So Rashi just simply over here says that Rav Adabava does not subscribe to the basic rule of Tana d'Bechizkiya. Okay. To that, there's much more discussion. There's Tosfos discusses this point as well. But anyway, we're just going to go back to the Gemara. We're going to stick with the basic outline of the Gemara's Pshat. So therefore, according to Rav Adabava, we're doing the same thing. We're just going to say it a little bit differently. What are we doing? Explaining the need for, on one hand, the Torah says v'chi inatzu anashim, that when a miscarriage is caused by a man, so then there's the Dmei Vlados payment, but if it's caused by an animal, not. And then what seemingly is the redundancy of u'bal hashor naki. So the Gemara says, Ela Amar Vadaba Bar Ava Anashim Kiniskavnu Zelaze Afagav Sheisha Sambi Isha Ye Anshu Kiniskavlu Isha Atzma Lo Ye Anshu. The Gemara says, when men fight, so what is the point to highlight when a man is intending to murder? So let's say two men are fighting. One intends to murder his fellow, and by accident hits a woman and kills her. So there was intent of murder, just not the victim who actually died. It was actually the intentional murder was for the other person. So in that circumstance, Rav Adabava says, if there is financial liability, so you're going to have to pay, because you're not going to be put to death. If, however, you were intent on killing the woman and you killed the woman, so now you are a rotseach, and therefore you're going to be exempt from having to pay financial liability. All that's true when man kills. Now, when your ox kills a woman, even if your ox was intent on killing that woman, there's still going to be financial liability, because there's simply no rule of kim lebe derabim minei as it relates to animals. That rule of kim lebe derabim minei only applies to man. So now it's basically the same point. It just sharpened a little bit better don't want to say, I shouldn't have said that. It sharpened to Rav Ada Ba'ahava's liking, because now basically it comes out that we can make a very strong argument that if your animal causes Demei Vlados, your animal should have to pay. If humans cause Demei Vlados, they're going to pay. And we know by humans, there are going to be cases of exemption. By animals, there is no case of exemption. So therefore, the owner of the animal should have to pay under all circumstances. That's the argument I would have constructed. And that would have resulted in, I have to pay Demei Vlados if my animal were to cause a miscarriage. So therefore, Kasav Rachman Baal Shor Naki de Patre, de Petire, and therefore the Baal Shor Naki is coming to tell me that even though the argument would have been a good argument, but the Torah goes out of its way to tell me, no, I do not pay. If my animal causes a miscarriage, I do not pay the Demei Vlados. This is the Pshat of Rav Ada Ba'ava explaining Rav Yossi Aglili, what seemingly is a redundancy in the Torah's Baal Shor Naki is explained. So the Gemara, well, the Torah's description of Baal Shor Naki is by a tam. So, right, is there going to be Demei Vlados by a muad? Well, that actually, I believe it's coming up. Right, if she doesn't die, so then Anoshi Anish.
The issue, she does die, is your yonshu. Rav Ada Ba'ava says, the
person says, well, that's again because Rav Ada Ba'ava is now focusing on the kavana. If their kavana was to hit, not to kill her, so then you're going to pay. Rav Ada Ba'ava, I'll be here to discuss it afterwards. The big change for Rav Ada Ba'ava is not the consequence of death, but the consequence of intent. Intent becomes the key factor in deciding whether or not there's a financial liability or not. If I intended to kill the woman and I killed her, so then kimle b'derabimene. If I intended to kill the man and I killed the woman, there's no kimle b'derabimene. Okay, again, I'll be here after if you want to discuss it more with me after. Okay, back to the Gemara v'chein ki asa rav... Rav Chaga came from the south. He brought a brisa, and the brisa that he brought supported exactly this pshat that was given by Rav Ada Ba'ava. The pshat of, I'll just say quickly, the pshat of, you could have made a very strong argument that if my animal caused a miscarriage, I would have to pay, based on the fact that if a man caused a miscarriage, sometimes he pays, sometimes he doesn't pay. If an animal causes a miscarriage, by an animal there's no principle of kimle b'derabimene, so therefore the argument would have been, you should be on the hook. The Baal Shor Naki is coming to tell me, no, that you're not going to have to pay. That's the argument by Rav Ada Ba'ava, corroborated by the Braisa. Let's continue. Tanya Idach. We are now up to the third approach. So far, to this point in the Gemara, we're in the very bottom of Mem Beis Amud Aleph. We have really been discussing one point yesterday and so far up to this point today. And that is that the Torah, when introducing us to the idea that the Tam kills, the owner of the Tam is put to death, but the owner of the Tam is Naki. What is meant by Naki? So far we have in the Gemara the Pshat of Rabbi Eliezer back on the top of Mem Beis Amud Aleph. Going further back. Back to the middle of Mem Aleph Amud Beis, we had first the pshat of Rabbi Eliezer, and that by the owner of the tam there's no payment of kofar. There's not even a payment of chatzi kofar. That is pshat number one. Pshat number two was Rav Yossi Aglili, who says that Baal Shor Naki means that you don't pay, the owner of the animal does not pay Demei Vlados. And now we're going to be introduced to the third pshat in this, and this is Rabbi Akiva. So we have, in terms of an outline of a Gemara, three basic approaches amongst the Tanaim in terms of what the Torah is teaching us when it says that the owner of the Tam is Naki. We've had Rabbi Eliezer, Rav Yosef Glili, and now we are going to see Rabbi Kiva. Tan Yidach, the Gemara quotes a third opinion, Baal HaShor Naki, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Naki Midmei Eved. If your short Tam were to kill an Eved Kanani, so then you would not be liable for the Kanas. Torah tells us that if an animal kills an Eved Kanani, either a man or a woman, an Eved Kanani or Shivcha Kananis, so then you have to pay 30 shkalim to the owner of the Eved. That is the Kanas that you have to pay. If your animal was a Tam, so Rabbi Kiva says, that's what the Torah is teaching us by saying that you do not pay for the Demei Eved. Now the Gemara says, what an interesting shot by Rabbi Kiva. We're now in the very top of Mem Beis Amud Beis. Now remember, every time that Rabbi Eliezer offered the pshat, Rabbi Kiva looked at Rabbi Eliezer and says, well, that wasn't a good pshat. In fact, what was Rabbi Kiva's point to Rabbi Eliezer? You know that when it's tam and you pay megufo, the source of collection by a tam is the animal itself. Now if the animal killed, what does that mean? It means that the animal sentenced to die. It means that you execute the animal, and it means that you're not allowed to eat nor get any benefit from the animal whatsoever. Okay, good. Now that becomes a source of payment. So Rabbi Akiva says, so how can there be an expectation of payment when the source of payment has been reduced to zero? And that was Rabbi Akiva's question to Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, now it's fascinating because Rabbi Akiva's question really turns around now on himself. Rabbi Akiva says, well, you don't have to pay the kenas of an Eved Kenani. Well, of course not. Where are you paying it from? You're paying it from the animal itself. What's the animal's worth right now? Zero. So the Gemara says, so why not? So Rabbi Kiva, what are you going to say about that? So the name Rabbi Kiva l'nashev alo atzma in mishtam l'megufo. So have you labezed in v'shaim lach? So and the Gemara asks, you know, in the same sarcastic tone that Rabbi Kiva asked Rabbi Eliezer. So now what are you going to do? You're going to bring the carcass to the Beis Din and say, okay, that's it. That's your source of payment. It's not going to help. So the Gemara says, "Amar Shmuel bar Rav Yisrael kishakana bala v'shachto." So the Gemara says, "Well, maybe the Rabbi Kiva is entertaining the following scenario: the animal killed, an Eved Kenani, and it should be sentenced to die. And it's about to be taken to court, and it was sentenced to die. And before the actual execution of the animal, someone went ahead and shechted it." So the Gemara says, "Ma'u detem l'shalaminei." So now a havamina would have been that this now becomes the source of payment because we shechted the animal. So the Gemara says, "Kamash malan ho bar ketalahu afagav deshechted l'shalaminei." So since the animal was sentenced to die, so therefore cannot become the source of payment. That's right now the a suggestion by the Gemara. So ihachil Rabbi Lazar namika shekanu v'shachto. So the Gemara says, look, if this answer works for Rabbi Akiva over here, so when Rabbi Akiva dismissed Rabbi Eliezer earlier in yesterday's daf, excuse me, why didn't we make the same suggestion for Rabbi Eliezer? So hachinami. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. You know what? This suggestion could have worked for Rabbi Eliezer as well. V'savadilma islay taima achrina da'adav mehai. So the Gemara says, but what Rabbi Akiva was kind of hoping was that Rabbi Eliezer would have a better answer, because this is not such an exciting answer. The animal was executed; it was sentenced to die, but before the actual execution, we shechted the animal. It's not a great answer. It's an okimta, and what Rabbi Akiva was kind of hoping is that Rabbi Eliezer would have something better to say. But so the Gemara says, okay, but why didn't Rabbi Elazar himself give this answer? So Amalacha, Hasam Diskav Laharagas the Behemah Vaharagas Adam, Dishor La Barkatolahu Klal. So the Gemara says, well, consider that when an animal committed murder, but unintentional murder, let's say an animal was intent on killing another animal, and just out of unintentionally kills a human, and we're going to learn together that this animal is not put to death. An animal is only put to death when it was intent on killing a person. I know that's kind of hard to determine intent by an animal, right? You can't exactly question the animal before nor after. I realize that, but all right, okay. But in other words, but it is a criteria. A criteria that an animal is going to be killed is only when it was intent on killing. Vishur la berkatalahu klal desakada chamina nechayev. So it's the kra lemaute. So there I need a pasuk of exclusion. Avahachad mikar berkatalahu. Lot sarach kra afagav deshachte. But the Gemara says, but over here, come on. Meaning, consider the animal is sentenced to die. Like, we shouldn't even be entertaining this discussion that, well, if we shechted the animal right before the execution, so therefore it could serve as a source of payment. It can't serve as a source of payment. The animal was sentenced to die. So the Gemara says, even this discussion, like, we shouldn't even be entertaining this discussion. Now, if this is a way that we're going to reject the discussion, so then for Rabbi Kiva, which we propose this idea, we should make exactly the same point. And that is that if the animal sentenced to die, the animal cannot serve as a source of revenue to pay the obligation. Period. So the Gemara says, Ela Amarav, Asi, Hai Milsa, So Rav Asi said, you know, all this bothered me, and I heard it from a great man. And it was said in the name of Rav Yosi Rabbi Chanina, and that is Agadat Chamina. Hova Amar Rav Akiva, Af Tam Shechava Ba'adam Shalem, B'Moser Nezik Shalem. So we know the following. According to Rabbi Akiva, there is a scenario in which a Tam pays full Nezik. Now, that's not the basic rule. The basic rule is that when a Tam damages, it pays Chatzi Nezik. However, Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that if there was a collision between an animal and a man, even though the animal was a Tam. Now, we've discussed this earlier in the Masechta about offsetting penalties, right? Offsetting financial penalties. But if a man and an animal collided, according to Rabbi Kiva, and it doesn't offset the financial damages to one another, does not offset, and the damage that was done to the man is greater than the animal, the damage that was done to the animal has to make reimbursement, and according to Rabbi Akiva, full damages. So we do have at least one case in which, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Tam pays full damages. So now that we're here, so now we could suggest Mishalom Nami Demei Eved Me Aliyah. So now I could have entertained the idea, at least it gives us now a platform in which we can entertain the idea that if your Tam animal were to kill an Eved Kanani, you should be paying the Kanas of Shloshim Shalom. So therefore, Kasav Rachman Baal Shor Naki, and that's why I need the Torah to tell me that the Baal Shor Naki, that he does not pay the Shloshim Shalom. So Amale Rabbi Zera Le Rav Asi, Vaha Tavri Rabbi Kiva Le Gezize. You know, when Rabbi Kiva said over this halachi, he literally broke his fist, which is an expression the Gemara is basically, what basically means by that is, even Rabbi Kiva in this chiddush, that a collision between a Tam and a man is going to result in Nezek Shalem, even Rabbi Akiva backtracked a little bit on that point, and that is, the Tanya, Gemara quotes the Brisa, Rabbi Akiva, Amar Yachol Yishalem in Aliyah, Tam Olam Kiv Mishpat Hazeh Ya'aseh Lo, Migufo Mishalem Ve'en Mishalem in Aliyah. Even in this scenario, even though it's full damages, but it's not out of pocket, it's still going to remain a capped payment based on the value of the animal. So even Rabbi Akiva says that when a Tom does damage to a man in the course of a collision, even then, yes, it's full damages, but capped at the value of the animal, it still basically behaves like a Tom. So therefore, if an animal were to kill an Eved Kanani, there wouldn't even be a platform to stand on to say, even as a Havamina, that you should pay the Shloshim Shkalim. So the Gemara says, Ela Amarav Eitz Derech. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's suggest it like in the following manner. Sakadat Chamina Hol Umachmirenu Ke'eved Yoser Mi Ben Chorin. You know, when your animal kills an Eved Kanani, so it's a Chumrah. Because the Torah says you're going to have to pay, and the Torah tells you how much you're going to have to pay, irrespective of how much the Eved Kanani actually is worth. Shekein, Chorin Yafes Sela Nosin Sela Shloshim Nosin Shloshim. Because if your animal were to kill a person, a Ben Chorin, a free man, so then what you pay is his value. The Eved Yafes Sela Nosin Shloshim Mishalom Name Deme Eved Min Aliyah. So, when you kill an Eved Kanani, it doesn't matter what his worth is. And even if his worth was one Sela, the Torah says that when I say you kill, by the way, I meant your animal. Well, if your animal were to kill an Eved Kanani, you have to pay Shloshim, even if he's only worth one Sela. Now that we know that there's a built-in Chumrah to the Shloshim that you pay, now we can construct an argument. Well, even if what killed the animal was my Tom, well, I should pay also. Because the Torah was machmir in terms of the payment of this kanas. So nami demei evin min aliyah. I'm sorry. So mishalom nami demei evin min aliyah. So now that's the hava. I mean, that's why I would have thought. So kasa rechman abal shor naki. So that's why the Torah says bal shor naki, to come and teach me that no. That the owner of the tam does not have to pay demei vlados, even though we could have constructed an argument otherwise. And this argument that Rava just gave in defense of Rabbi Akiva is supported by a brisa. Tanya Kavase de Rava, we're going to learn a brisa together. And this brisa is going to basically repeat the argument of Rava in terms of why, according to Rabbi Kiva, I might have thought that if my Tom kills an Evi Kanani, I should pay Shloshim, and why the Torah has to then go out of its way and say, no, that Baal Shornaki. So here's the brisa, Baal Shornaki, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Naki mi Demei Eved. You do not have to pay the value of an Evi Kanani. I don't mean the value, I mean the Kanas of Shloshim Shkalam. Now, when your animal kills a ben chorin, there's a big difference between whether the animal was a tam or a muad. Tam, no kofer. Muad, there's kofer. So too, when my animal kills an evi kanani, if it's a tam, no payment. If it's a muad, payment of shloshim shkalim. V'od kavachom eruma ben chorim shenasan kol shavav chalakta ba ben tam lamuad evit sheino nosin ela shloshim eino din shenech lakbo ben tam lamuad. So lo machmirenu be'evid yosem mi ben chorin she ben chorin yafesela nosin sela shloshim nosin shloshim ve'evid yafesela nosin shloshim. So here the brisa is making exactly the same argument that Rava made, which is I could have seen a basic difference in that with an evi kanani, even if that evi kanani is worth one sela, the Torah says I have to pay shloshim, I have to pay 30 selaim for his death, so for my animal killing him. So now I could have made the argument, well, once the Torah is machmir, so now let's go one step further and let's say that if my tam were to kill the Evi Kanani, I'd still be on the hook to pay the Shloshim Shkalim. Yachol Yechav Tam Alam Rabal Ashur Naki Naki Midmei Eved. That's why the Torah by the tam tells us the Baal Ashur is Naki, that I do not even pay the Shloshim Shkalim. Okay, period. I can breathe for just a moment now. That ends the discussion in the Gemara regarding what do we learn from the words Baal Ashur Naki. The Gemara spent a daf and a half, Mem Aleph Amud Beis, and the entirety of Mem Beis, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, discussing what do we learn from the three words of Baal Ashur Naki, that when your animal kills, what the Torah says, you're going to be free and clear. What are you free and clear from? So in the Gemara we saw three Tanaim, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yosi Aglili, and Rabbi Kiva, all deriving three different points in terms of what exactly the Torah is exempting you, and then the length of the discussion had to be, it was involved due to the fact that the Gemara had explained why I would have thought differently. What is the Torah? What idea is the Torah negating? What havamina would I have had had the Torah not said Baal Shornaki, and why did the Torah have to come along and say it? I don't know. It's a right question, and I don't know the Rambams well enough to know. Generally speaking, yes. I'm being honest. I didn't do all my homework. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, the Hamis Ish O Isha, Amar Rabbi Kiva. So we are now going to be discussing the following. Just a brief introduction before we start with the Gemara. In terms of Yerusha, so generally Yerusha works where a person dies and it goes to his children, specifically his sons. And the entire estate gets passed over to his sons. Now, if there's no sons, so then there's an order in terms of who's the next in line. Okay. When we do Baba Basra, we're going to be discussing this at length. There is, however, one interesting Yerusha that is not a bloodline Yerusha, and that is husband and wife. But it's really only one directional. And that is that when a wife dies and predeceases a husband, her entire estate goes over to him. It is the only non-bloodline Yerusha that takes place in the Torah. Okay? The Yerusha Tabal. And it's Min HaTorah, meaning that idea is a Torah idea. It is not a takana that was done by the Chachamim. It's a Torah idea that all of her estate goes over to her husband. What we will be learning in the course of the next couple of lines of Gemara is that there may be some exceptions in which the husband will not inherit some of the estate of his wife. Why does it come up now in our Gemara? You'll see. It'll become very clear why this discussion comes up at this point in time. We're on the very bottom of Mem Beis Amud Beis. We're at the two dots. Let us begin. Tana Rabbanan, Vehemis Isha Isha Amar Rabbi Kiva V'chi Ma Ba Zel Lamdeinu. What is the Torah coming to tell me that if the victim is a man or a woman? So L'chayv Al Isha Ki Isha Rikvar Nemar Ki Gach Shor Es Isha O Es Isha. A pasuk earlier in the Torah goes on to describe that if an ox were to kill a person, whether it be a man or a woman, so then there is liability. So you already see that when it comes to the victim, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. So Allah, so the next pasuk, also telling me man or woman, is really redundant. Allah Hakishisha Ish. So Rabbi Kiva says, really, there's another point to be generated, and that's the following: Ma Ish Nizakav Liyorshav Afisha Nizakeha Liyorsheha. If a man is entitled, is awarded damages, and that man dies, well, the damages are it's a receivable, and so therefore it's going to go to the estate, and the estate now is able to collect on the awarded damages. If a woman was awarded damages and she dies, it's going to go to her children. Now, based on my introduction, that should surprise you. It should surprise us all. It shouldn't go to her children. It should go to her husband. So, v'savra v'kiva lo yaris labal, that prompts the Gemara to ask the question. I don't understand. Rabbi Kiva does not subscribe to this idea. The husband inherits his wife. In fact, we know that Rabbi Kiva does subscribe to the idea. Rabbi Kiva says it black on white, that the husband inherits his wife. So, if she is awarded damages and she were to then die, so that receivable should go to the husband. So, what the Gemara is saying is that, generally speaking, that's true. Her damages that were awarded to her, that has not yet been collected, that is going to be inherited by the husband. And the husband will have the right to collect those damages. With one notable exception, kofar. If what killed the woman was an animal which was a muad, so that kofar payment is not going to go to the husband, it's going to go to her children. Why? Gemara explains. Hove in mishtalim ela la'achar misa. Because the kofar payment is not assessed until after she's dead. And so therefore, this is in halacha what's referred to as ra'oi. It's something which has, it is a obligation, but only awarded to her post-mortem. And that the husband does not collect. And as far as the husband is concerned, he does inherit his wife, but only actual holdings that she has. But anything that is any earnings that is generated after she dies is not going to go to the husband. It goes down to the next generation. It goes down to her children. Now, there's another area in Yerusha where we find this very same idea, that you only get ra'i, you only get muhsak, but you don't get ra'i, and that is the pishnaim of the bechor. When the eldest son is entitled to two times greater than that of his brothers, that's only two times greater than of the estate's current holdings. But if there is any earning generated after the death of the father, that is divided equitably amongst the brothers. That's the other area in halacha where we make this distinction between ra'i and muhsak. So the Gemara says, "My time, amakra." Now the Gemara is just simply going to now establish this idea that kofar is only assessed after the woman has died, or for that matter, any victim. But we're speaking specifically about the woman. My time, amakra vehemis yisho isha, and the ox kills a man or a woman. Hashur yisakel v'gam ba'alav yumas. The ox is put to death, and then the owner of the ox is killed. But of course, that's not true. Meaning, it's not true. In other words, you got to read on in the pasuk. V'im kofer yushas alav. But then you apply a kofer payment on the owner of the animal to pay to the family. So you see that the kofar is only going to be assessed after the death of the ox. After the death of the ox clearly takes place after the death of the woman. So the timeline is: ox kills a woman, ox is then taken to court, ox is found guilty, ox is put to death, then and only then is there going to be an assessment of kofar. So clearly kofar is coming after she dies. Therefore kofar is filed under this category of ra'ui, not muhsak, and that's why the husband does not get it.
If she's killed by a tar,
there's no kofar. Okay. So vegan balav you must inkofi yushasalav. So this is where we stand right now in our explanation of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that there is damages awarded to her that are not going to go to the husband, but now what we've done is we just simply limited the whole discussion to kofir with a very good explanation. Because kofir is not awarded to her until after she's dead. And the husband only inherits holdings, but not futures. So the Gemara says, "Amr Rabbi Kiva." I'm sorry. Uvin Zikin Lo Amr Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara says, "But we'll consider the following: a brisa. Let's say an ox hits a woman and causes a miscarriage. No, say Nezik Vitzar Leisha. So pain and the actual depreciation of the woman goes to the woman. Udmei Valadus Labal. But the value of the fetus, that goes to the husband. Like we discussed earlier this morning, and we're going to be discussing again right now, and that is, the Dmei Vladis goes to the husband. That the Torah awards him that money. Ein ha-ba'al. Now let's say, husband died after the damages. So the husband was there for the damage, but wasn't around for the collection. Okay, so then no sin liyoshav. So that's fine. So now it's just simply collectible that the husband himself couldn't collect. So his children, the estate is able to collect it. Ein ha'isha. Now, what if the woman dies before the collection? So then no. Now we in the Gemara we have the word no senis, but we're talking about the perpetrator. So probably the girsa should be no sin. No sin liyoshav. So those damages are awarded to her yorshim. Now we're talking about damages. We're not talking about kofar. We're just talking about nezek. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, that shouldn't be true. The damages should go to her husband. So stay tuned. So Haisa Sheikh of Nishtachra, Giyaris Zacha. Now the next case in the Braisa is where it's either a freed slave or it's a giyaris married to a ger, and the damages were done. So you see, they don't have family halachically. Gerish and his guy kakana nola dummy, and so therefore the money that was awarded to them now becomes hefker because they don't have a next of kin, and because the perpetrator is the one holding the money, so therefore he gets to keep the money. Okay, that is the point of the brisa where we want to focus on the first part of the brisa. Now, the first part of the brisa just taught us that if a woman was damaged and there was nezik awarded to her, but she died before the collection, that nezik goes to her family and her kids. And we don't understand that, because the only thing that we said is going to go to her kids is only the kofar, not the nezik.
The nezik is also assessed after she dies.
It's awarded to her before she dies. In other words, the damages that are done to her, the number may be figured out after she dies, but if we're talking about nezek, she's entitled to the nezek the moment the nezek happens.
So if she's killed by the town,
for instance. No, we're talking now where she wasn't killed. So the Bryce is discussing a scenario in which caused damage. In fact, no one caused damage, causing a miscarriage. But she didn't die. So if she then subsequently dies, those damages should go to her husband. Her husband is inheriting the estate. And therefore, part of the estate is the awarded damages, which have yet to have been collected. Her husband should get it. And meanwhile, the Bryce says, her kids are going to get it. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabba begrusha v'chein Amar Rav Nachman begrusha." So Rabba and Rav Nachman both explain the brisa. We're talking about a very specific scenario, and that is she was divorced. So a husband only is going to inherit her if she died while they were married. If she died once a divorced woman, so then the husband's not going to be getting it. To which the Gemara says, "Now wait one second. That's interesting." Because Grusha, Amri, Grusha, Nami Teflok B'Dmei Vlados. Well, that's interesting. If she's a divorced woman, so then her kids should be getting everything. The Nezik, the Tsar, and the Dmei Vlados. And if you look back at the Bryce on the bottom of the previous Amud, you will see, where did the Dmei Vlados go to? Goes to the husband. But he's not. But wait one second. We just explained that the Bryce is talking about where she was divorced. There is no husband. What are we talking about? How can he be receiving the Demei Vlados? Gemara is going to tell us a halacha, which quite frankly is so interesting. I didn't see this coming, even though I learned this before, but it's amazing. This really should stick with me. Amara Papa, so Amara Papa, Torah Zachsa, Demei Vlados, Labala, Fila Baala, Biznos. The Demei Vlados payment is awarded to the husband, even if he's not the husband. Let's go one step further. Let's say a man impregnates a woman, doesn't marry her, impregnates a woman, and through damages, somebody hits her, or an animal causes a miscarriage. So he is still the father, not the husband. I mean, whoever impregnated her, he is still going to be awarded the Demei Vlados. Now, it sounds weird. It sounds strange. The Gemara bases it on a drasha. The Gemara doesn't give a svara behind this. And I'd venture a guess that if left a svara, you would think why would be awarding him Demei Vlados? He's not her husband. But it's a special halacha in the Demei Vlados. You can't extend this to anything. It doesn't extend anywhere else, but it is fascinating.
The wife is not there, it's the regular wife. Hmm? The regular woman, not the
Arab. No, that's funny that you say that. That's funny that you said that. Tosos discusses. I wasn't prepared to talk about this. Tosos discusses what if the union was an erva union? Is he still going to be awarded the Demei Vlados? Okay. I did a little bit of homework last night. I didn't do all my homework. But Tosos discusses that very issue. Okay.
They don't marry.
Right, right, right.
They're married.
All right. Okay.
So that's
no, no, no. That no. You need eight. You need eight. No. You need eight.
That means they're husband and wife.
No, 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 no.
She was a
wedding party. No, that's not enough. You need. The Rambam says in order to create marriage, you need eidim. You need. Obviously, I would say eidim, meaning eidim yichud. Right, the Edom need to be situated in front. They need to be told this bia is going to be for the purpose of marriage. In other words, there are opinions out there that agree with you, but the Rambam says no. That in order for marriage to happen through bia, there has to be Edom. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay. So afilu ba'ala biznus, my time amakra kashir yishisalav bal ha'isha. Okay, and Rashi over here points out that in this context, Baal HaIsha just simply means the Baal. Okay, he's awarded the Demei Vlados even though they're not married. Fine. Now, next part of the discussion in the Gemara, I love it. It's so interesting. We have now basically made a very basic distinction between Roi versus Mochsak. Now, we have said that when a husband inherits his wife's estate, he only inherits the holdings. That which is currently there. And when we say that which is currently there, we excluded kofar because the kofar payment is only assessed after she's dead, not before she's dead. And so therefore, that is part of the estate that is only realized after her death, and therefore the husband doesn't get that. That goes to her children. Okay. Now, what's interesting over here is that we are going to have a nice accounting discussion about the distinction between Roi versus Mochsak. What is Roi? What is Mochsak? So, the easiest way to say it is that Mochsak is any asset that is currently on hand, right? An actual holding. But, let's say it's an account receivable. Let's say money is owed, but hasn't yet paid. Does that fall under the category of Mochsak, or does that fall under the category of Roi? Okay? So, I'll leave that open-ended. The Gemara in Baba Basra has this discussion. Now, the Gemara in Baba Basra has a discussion in a slightly different format, but it's going to amount to the same basic point. The Gemara in Baba Basra discusses it regarding the Bechor in his Pishnayim. The halacha is the same, that the Bechor only gets the double portion on Mochsak and not on Roi. Anything which is Roi is going to be equitably distributed amongst all the brothers. So the Gemara over there has the following discussion. The Gemara over here now is making reference to the Gemara in Baba Basra, and let's go over each opinion. Amarabba Gabu Karka, Yeshlo. Gabu Maos, Einlo. Rabba's opinion is like this. If there is an account receivable in the estate, and it was collected through property, Rabba says that's Mochsak. Why? Because it's not only tangible, there's a lien on that property. So even though it has not yet been collected, but my lien or the estate's lien on that property makes it as if the estate actually is holding that property at the time of death. So therefore, according to Rabbah, that's considered muhsak. However, if the loan was satisfied through money, that's considered roi, because that money that was used to pay back, that was not the same money that was lent. So that's considered roi. That's Rabbah's opinion in the Gemara Baba Basra. Rav Nachman actually goes in the exact opposite direction. Rav Nachman Amar Gabu Maos Yeshlo Gabu Karka Ein Lo. So Rav Nachman is of the opinion that if there was an account receivable by the estate, and it was, and after the death of the father, and it was collected with money, that's considered muhsak. Why? Money out, money in. Now, we all know it's not the same money, but still, it's not physically the same money, but it's the same money. Rav Nachman's position is harder to understand. I agree with you, but it's therefore it falls under the category of mochsa. Land, on the other hand, well, it wasn't land that was lent out; it was money that was lent out. It just happened to have been collected through land. That's considered roi. That's not considered machzah.
So does Rav Nachman say that the report gets double in this case?
So for Rav Nachman, if the estate collected for it's to satisfy the obligation, according to Rav Nachman, if they collected money, the bechor gets pishnaim of that. If they collected land, he does not get pishnaim of that. That's Rav Nachman's position. So our Gemara over here, having a similar discussion regarding the nezek awarded to a woman, and she dies. So, according to Rabban, according to Rav Nachman, why couldn't they give their answers of either it was collected with money, according to Rabba, or it was collected with land, according to Rav Nachman? Because we just learned, according to them, that for Rabba, land, and according to Rav Nachman, I'm sorry, for Rabba, money, and according to Rav Nachman, land, is considered muhzak. So why didn't they give those answers over here? So the Gemara says, Amar Amri Hanimi Lebnei Marava Aliba Darabanan Ki Kamar Hacha Kerevi. So the Gemara says, yeah, but even their positions in the Gemara Baba Basra only was an explanation of one Tana's opinion. Now it happens to be the Chachamim, the majority, but still one Tana's opinion. We are trying to explain our Brisa here according to Rabbi. How the Gemara knew that our Brisa over here is going like Rabbi specifically, I'm not sure. But our Gemara is going like Rebbe, so therefore Rebbe views all this as I was going to say roi. Begrusha v'lo megmina lahachi k'Rebbe d'amar b'chor no tapishnayim b'shevach d'muchzak. I'm sorry. Right, Rebbe views all this as muchzak, meaning any account receivable, regardless of how it's collected. If it's collected by money, if it's collected by property, it's all considered mochzak, which now, that's according to Rebbe, which now means that according to Rebbe, how are we going to explain our case over here of the woman? Meaning in the case of the woman, she was damaged, so now it's an obligation. And according to Rebbe, it doesn't matter how it goes collected. Collected through money, collected through land, it's considered mochzak. So if it's considered mochzak, it should go to the husband. So then, what would be the only way to explain our case over here? The answer is kofar. Why? Because kofar is not awarded to her until after she dies. And that's what makes kofar uniquely different than all other account receivables. Because all other account receivables are owed to her before she died. Kofar is only owed to her after she dies, and that's why it makes it fundamentally different. And that's why it doesn't go to the husband, and that's why it only goes to her children.
What can you argue that since once she dies, the marriage is dissolved, and the husband no longer has any claims that whatever she states gets,
Because according to Rebbe, an account receivable is part of the estate.
No, but the thing is that.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's argue the point. Let's.
If Rebbe cancels the mitzvah, then when would the first one get double portion ever?
When would what?
Get the double portion. According to Rebbe, it has to get double portion. Therefore, when would he get double portion? Everything is mitzvah, the money.
In other words, it's all part of the estate. Meaning, an account receivable is part of the estate.
So we'll get
he'll get a double portion of that as well.
And
of any outstanding obligations that's owed to the estate. So in other words, the notes. All notes outstanding.
So everything
else. Anything that's there, all notes outstanding. According to Rebbe, the Bechor is going to get. If let's say there are, there's $100,000 of debt owed to the estate, so the Bechor is going to get two times.
Isn't that halacha? That's halacha. Rabbi's halacha, right?
I don't know that as well. I'm sorry about that as well. Okay, a lot of things I need to research. Let's quickly summarize what we've done today. Finished the discussion today of the Gemara regarding Baal Shor Naki. What is learned from the pasuk of Baal Shor Naki? We have three Tanaim on the table in terms of what we have generated from the Baal Shor Naki. We have Rabbi Eliezer back on Memal from Midbeis telling us that the Baal Shor Naki is going on kofar, meaning that if your Tam kills somebody, you do not need to pay kofar. We have Rav Yossi HaGalili, who says that if your Tom were to be responsible for the death of a fetus, so you do not have to pay for the Dmei Vlados. And we have Rabbi Kiva, who says, Baal Shor Naki is coming to teach me that if my Tom were to kill an Eved Kanani, I do not have to pay the Shloshim Shekalim. Those are the three opinions amongst the Tanayim. And then, for the rest of today, we went on to discuss the halacha that if a woman was killed and there was a kofar payment that was assessed to her, that kofar payment is not going to go to her husband, but it's going to go down to her children. This is unusual. Generally speaking, a woman dies, her entire estate goes over to her husband, Yerusha Saba'al, and this is a notable exception. And to quickly summarize, encapsulate, why is a notable exception? Because it's not even an account receivable that she had while she was alive. The assessment of kofar only comes after she's dead. And since it's an obligation that comes to her after she's dead, this falls under the category of ro'i. And the husband only inherits that which is muhsak, that and that which that is ro'i. And then what we discussed along the way is a machlokus amarim in the Gemara Baba Basra. And really also Machlokas Tanaim as well, in terms of what exactly is the defining, the definitions of Roi versus Mochzak. But if you subscribe to Rebbe's viewpoint, which the Gemara says we do, and that any account receivable is considered Mochzak, even if it goes collected with money, even if it goes collected with property, it's considered Mochzak. And that's why our discussion over here, the only thing that the husband is not going to be entitled to is only going to be the kofar, because that, even according to Rebbe's considered Roi, because there the assessment is not done only until after she's dead.